Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, celebrating our 32nd year, bringing you the best in food talk throughout Northern California. And now, by the magic of the internet. I know it sounds so primitive, doesn't
it? So is anybody out there listening to internet?
They are. We're real happy to have the co-author and photographer for a brand new book that just came out in September, October of 2019. Kate Leahy. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
We haven't seen you for about 3-4 years.
Yeah, you know, I had to write another book so you'd have me on. So.
And when the book came out, we had you on for Burma Superstar, was it correct?
Right, yeah. I've brought John Lee. He is my co-author and he's the photographer for Lavash, and he actually also is the photographer for Burma Superstar.
Welcome.
Hi there. Hi.
Thank you, and thanks for coming in from Singapore today.
Sure, yeah. No, just for you guys, definitely, yeah.
You did fly in just a day or so ago?
I flew in an hour ago, just for you guys. No, I flew in about a day and a half ago.
Yeah. And you live in Singapore?
Now I do, but I'm originally from the Bay Area, and we just moved to Singapore about 3 months ago.
So. Wow.
So how is it in Singapore?
It's hot.
I was going to say, it's pretty steamy there.
I think I'm getting used to it. It took about a month of getting used to just feeling hot all the time. Yeah. You know, and then at some point, your body gets used to it.
So. I know. My son lives in Hong Kong.
Oh,
they don't go outside this time of year.
Right.
Tell us about the new book, Kate, how you got involved in this project.
Well, I'll actually start with John because it started while we were working on Burma Superstar, and I was going to jump on a plane to Yangon to shoot and research for, you know, Burmese food.
And is that the capital of Armenia?
We were heading to the capital, not the capital, but the main city of Burma to start research. So it kind of goes back a little ways, but I'll start with John because it's a really interesting story on how he got interested in Armenian food.
Yeah. I'm a Chinese American from California. Yeah, from San Francisco. Yeah.
I understand the Armenian connection.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I have an old college buddy of mine who was Armenian American and who moved back to Armenia a number of years ago. And out of the blue, April of 2015, I get an email from him say, "Hey, John, do you want to go to Armenia and teach food photography to a bunch of high school kids?" And I looked over at, I showed my wife the email, and she's like, "Sure, why not?" And then I immediately had to Wikipedia Armenia. I hate to say, I did not know anything about Armenia. Armenia is bordered by Turkey to the west, Georgia to the north, Azerbaijan to the east, and Iran to the south. So it's in, I guess you would call it the Caucasus, the Southern Caucasus. And it was a former Soviet state. And it's kind of, it's on the Silk Route. Mm-hmm. It's not quite Middle Eastern. It's not quite Central Asian. It's not quite European.
Well, it's interesting because I think when you talk about Armenia's biggest city, Yerevan is a very kind of, it's an exciting place right now. You see high school kids walking around. Some of the high school kids who are probably in your photography class, John, they look to Paris for their fashion. Yeah. You walk around and whatever's happening in the streets of Paris, that's what the kids are wanting to emulate. So you get this very sort of, there's lots of cafes. You can go on a Monday and you can have a glass of wine and you can listen to live jazz. It has this very exciting...
But that's also very recent.
This is a very, very recent part of
the
evolution of this country.
5-7 years ago, maybe not, right?
Mm. Right.
And Yerevan is the capital...
Capital
of Armenia.
Yes.
I remember a line from the book that from Yerevan, you can see Mount Ararat in Turkey. This is where Noah gathered two of each species, correct?
Historic? According to legend.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Armenia, we know where it is, and you learned where it was when your friend.
Right, right. So I had to look it up, look it up online. So I ended up randomly, this Chinese American kid, getting on a plane in July of 2015. To go spend 3 weeks in Yerevan or in Armenia to teach food photography to a bunch of high school kids. And in those 3 weeks, I completely fell in love with the country. Mm. I fell in love with the people, the food. There was a certain kind of familiarity to Armenia because it had this kind of Europeanness, and maybe it has to do with maybe with the Russian influence and the Soviet influence. But it was also very kind of swashbuckling, I guess is the closest word I can think. Because, you have 9th century monasteries. This is the oldest Christian country in the world. I think it predates Constantine by, I don't know, 30, 40 years or whatever it is. I'm not getting the exact date. It's steeped in kind of this rich history, but no one goes. You know, so you can actually walk up to a, you know, a monastery from 800 AD and just kind of pat it on, you know, just touch the walls, no big deal. No, it's not gonna be Sistine Chapel with 10,000, you know, tourists. So then I left there, after 3 weeks, I shot all these pictures, and I came back to San Francisco, and then 3 days later, I was on an airplane with Kate Leahy to go to Myanmar, to Burma, you know, to go do the photography for the Burma Superstar Cookbook.
Right, so we had a lot of time to kill.
So I pulled out the laptop and said, hey, Kate, take a look at these pictures I shot just last week or whatever it was, you know.
And I just thought, wow, this is amazing, because I actually, when I was a student at UC Davis, I did a college thesis. This is really random, but and really nerdy of me to even bring up in public. But I did a thesis called Feeding Nostalgia, Cookbooks and Armenian American Identity, which is just, you know, what are the chances? I'm this, like, you know, Irish American.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't look Armenian, however right. they look.
right. And so I had studied the food because I always, every Armenian friend I ever made, they had this love for food that was really special and also very specific. They knew exactly when peaches at the farmer's market in the Bay Area would be the best. And they also knew that that's when you bought, you know, 3 cases of peaches, because you would make all these things with it. And it was that kind of love for the details of food. I thought there's a special connection here. But still, when I was looking at John's pictures, this was food that didn't look like the food I had studied about Armenian Americans. But it also looks strangely just familiar in a different sense. It kind of reminded me of, like, this is the foundation of food in a lot of parts of the Mediterranean and Europe. I mean, when you think of, like, Neapolitan pizza and the blistered crust you get on that, that's kind of what this lavash looked like that John had shot. And I thought, there's something here. This is maybe the foundation of what we came to know as a lot of the favorite foods in the world.
Right. And coming back from Armenia, and I was in the Bay Area, I was trying to find the Armenian food that I was eating in the country of Armenia, only to realize that that kind of food does not exist necessarily here, because as I come to learn, you know, as I started to study, you know, kind of Armenian history, is that because of the Armenian genocide 104 years ago, the vast majority of Armenians kind of fled Armenia, and they just kind of were cast in the wind. So you have Armenians that relocated in Lebanon, in Syria, in Western Turkey, or Egypt, or then Boston and Fresno, and they take on the characteristics of the food that of the place that they live. So the food that we in like say in Glendale, California, or you know Fresno or whatever, what they attribute to Armenian food is not necessarily the food that was found within the geographic borders of the country of Armenia, because that was almost kind of hermetically sealed by the Soviet Union.
So give us a couple of examples of those things that are classically Armenian that maybe you wouldn't find outside of Armenia.
Lavash. And that is the title of the cookbook that we're going to talk about today.
Right.
The bread that launched 1,000 meals, plus salad, stews, and other recipes from Armenia. Speak briefly just about the third author that couldn't join us today.
Right. So our third author is Ara Zeta, and when we were coming together as a team to write this book, so we have John is this fantastic a photographer with a photojournalist background. I've had experience writing cookbooks that require travel, but we also wanted an Armenian American on our team so they could really see the differences between the food that they grew up eating versus the food they saw in Armenia. So we, through a network, through this organization called TUMO, which is the program that brought John to Armenia to teach these high school students, had also brought Ara to Armenia to teach cooking classes to high school students. So we all three formed this team. I call them my brothers from another mother at this point, because we've traveled extensively together. And through that, and through Ara's eyes, we saw the differences. He grew up eating pita a lot. He's Egyptian Armenian. He had some of the foods, like bastirma is a classic a cured meat covered with spices that's delicious. And Armenians all over the world know pastrma, but there was foods he saw in Armenia that he had never seen before. I mean, what would, like, gapama is a really delicious dish where you stuff a pumpkin with rice and dried fruit. And there's even a song that goes along with gapama.
Right. And we're not going to sing it. You can easily Google it, YouTube it, and you'll see it.
Yeah. Well, if we could spell it, we could Google it.
The pickles that you see, in Armenia have that. A lot of them are salt brine. They're fermented pickles. You get some Soviet influences in, like, salat vinaigrette, which is a salad of diced beets, carrots, potatoes, and dill pickles. And it's Soviet food, but everyone in Armenia.
Well, you said about that recipe in the book that every mom, every wife knows that how to make that dish.
Yeah.
Although they do sell salat vinaigrette at, you know, one of the Russian markets over Longaria Street in San Francisco. So, I mean, that does exist. You can find it here, which is nice.
And I love that market.
A royal market.
We'll take a break. Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the Chaos Arto Kitchen. Kate Leahy and photographer John Lee, co-authors of Lavash, the brand new book, The Bread That Launched 1,000 Meals. Back after this. In the Chaos Arto Kitchen today, Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, with our special guests, Kate Leahy and John Lee, who are visiting us. Kate from the San Francisco Bay Area and John from Singapore. I like saying that.
Mm-hmm. It makes me sound very, very worldly.
I know it's better than Milpitas.
The new book is Lavash, The Bread That Launched 1,000 Meals, plus salad, stews, and other recipes from Armenia. This is really fascinating how this perfect storm brought all three of you together. How unusual, John, that you were get asked to go to Armenia to teach photography to high school kids, and Kate, that you wrote your thesis on Armenian food. This was a book just waiting to happen. Why don't you describe the difference between pita and lavash? It seems they're kissing cousins.
Well, one thing about this bread that makes it so special, lavash is it's one of probably the most ancient breads in the world. I think the first breads were probably made somewhere in, you know, that Fertile Crescent part of the world. And this bread in particular, lavash, it's made in a tonir. A tonir is an oven that's made of clay, and in Armenia, it's buried in the ground. And it's all those cousins of ovens. There's, you know, the tandoor oven, and all throughout from India to Central Asia through the Middle East, there's some version of this oven. But in Armenia, it's a tonir, and it also heated homes. It kept homes warm. Families would gather around the tonir. Maybe the coals were really low in the fire, and you can actually stick your feet in there and warm them up. And I did that when I visited this bakery to learn how to make this bread. So in Armenia itself, lavash is the bread that is on every table at every meal. Pita, we didn't really see. That would be something you would see in Armenia only at an Armenian Syrian restaurant or an Armenian Lebanese restaurant, an Armenian, an expat coming into Yerevan and opening up the food from their cultural background. So, but lavash is just, it's the most Armenian of breads, really. I mean, it's the bread that even before the genocide, Armenians in Turkey were making, and Armenians in the eastern part of Armenia were making. And even after the Soviets tried to strip a lot of the satellites of their ethnic identity, Armenians kept making lavash. And that's really an important part. They still went to the villages, kept firing up the tonir to make this beautiful flatbread that's thin, it's stretched over a pillow, and then slapped against the hot oven wall, and then it puffs up. And in a minute, you have beautiful bread.
Yeah, literally a minute. It's because it's high heat, right?
And it's flexible. You don't look for a crust or...
Well, at first, I mean, when it comes out of the tonir, the oven, it's flexible and it has this kind of chewiness to it. And then as it cools, it dries, actually, and it becomes almost crackery. And what we learned is that the way that you rehydrate that is just get a little water spray and you just spray it a little bit, and then it all of a sudden just kind of forms back, mm. you know, rehydrates essentially.
So how can we approximate or recreate, those of us that don't have a ton here at home?
Well, Kate figured it out.
Right. Well, we were trying to figure out, we can't have a book where we require the first step of a recipe is dig a hole in your backyard and insert a tonnier and cure the tonnier for a few months and fire it, and now you're ready. So what we did is R and I ended up asking ladies who baked lavash. It's usually 95% of the time it's women making the lavash, and they work as a team.
And it's funny, it only lavash, because we go to other bakeries in Armenia where they're baking different kinds of breads. And a lot of times it was the men who were kind of like, you know.
But they weren't making lavash.
Right.
But lavash is women only.
And Kate's the right person to address.
Right. So it's definitely, culturally, it was always the women who had to tend to the tonnier, and maybe after they had been done baking lavash for the family, they would use the tonnier to maybe make a stew or something on the coals, or maybe they'd bake a cake. Gata is another recipe in our book, and it's a cake that traditionally would be baked after the coals of the tonnier had died down. But so trying to figure out how to make lavash, we're thinking, okay, is this like New York City bagels or something where you have to have a very special set of circumstances? Yes, you do, but you could have a delightful time making lavash at home. We had to figure out first if anyone used yeast, because a lot of the recipes in English before we went to Armenia, I looked at all the recipes I could find written in English about how to make this bread. And they some of them had baking soda in them, some of them had yogurt, some of them just had flour, water, and salt. And I thought, but that's not going to give you the results. That I just know, just in my experience of making flatbreads, that's not going to work. But do they use yeast? And we had to figure out if they use yeast or some sort of sourdough starter. And the answer is they do, but they used a Russian-Armenian nickname for yeast, so we had to then figure out how drozh. It's like we use drozh, and then we use tutkamor, and tutkamor means old dough. So there you go with your
starter.
Right.
And how do we approximate that crust?
So what I figured out, the best way to make it is to use an overturned wok if you happen to have one and you have a gas stove. You can put your overturned wok. And you can fire it up, and in a minute, it's hot enough to just drape the dough over it and then flip it. Almost like, you know, your first one might not be perfect, like making pancakes. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you have to sacrifice the first one and get a sense of things. But then you flip it over.
You included it was from a poet or something. I just have to redo this because I loved it so much. It was that first one. It's like making the first crepe or something like that. First batch is like first love, too hot to last.
So you don't want to use a nonstick wok, right?
Right. Okay. You would want some, like the wok I used was actually from the wok shop in San Francisco.
Yeah, carbon steel ones.
Right.
And do you oil this before putting the dough on?
If the wok is already cured and you've used it a few times, it's good to go. But I know not everyone has woks, and you shouldn't buy a wok just to make lavash at home unless you really love it as much as that poet. But you can do a great job with a griddle that you would use for pancakes, a cast iron griddle that covers two burners. Mm. You can then drape the lavash dough over it and cook it that way. And if you don't have a big enough pan, but you have maybe a 10 or 12 inch cast iron pan, just make a smaller, our recipe, you just cut the portions that we call four in half and make smaller lavash that's maybe more like a tortilla size. And you'll still have a wonderful tasting bread. It won't have that huge wrap quality that we saw, but it'll be very satisfying. The one thing that didn't work very well is doing it in the oven, unless you have some sort of pizza oven that gets very hot.
What about an outdoor gas grill?
Great.
Like that?
That works really well. At that point, I would just oil the dough and then put it onto
it
the gas
straight
grill.
Straight on the, on the grate. Yeah.
Like that.
Kind of like making pizza dough on the grill.
It's a bit,
Let's take a break at that point, and then we'll dive into the book, okay? Lavash, brand new. It's called The Bread That Launched 1,000 Meals Plus Salad, Stews, and Other Recipes from Armenia. Co-authors Kate Leahy and photographer John Lee. Did you contribute recipes too, John, or
I mean, not so much. I mean, so my When I think about food, I think about more from a cultural, like anthropological perspective. So I'm not the world's greatest in terms of recipes and kind of, I'm not that wonky about it, though. So.
But you're one heck of a photographer.
Well, thank you, thank you.
Did you shoot all the photography for the book?
Yes, I did, yes.
John Ash, Steve Garner in the KS Arto Kitchen back after this. In the KS Arto Kitchen this morning, Chef John Ash and Steve Garner with our special guests today. Well, all our guests are special. I should just purge that word special.
But this is very special.
It's very special. Kate Leahy and John Lee, two of the three authors of the new book, Lavash, the bread that launched 1,000 meals. I told Gwen Kilcher, my Garden Talk co-host, that I was having you on the show today. And she said, I love lavash. It's so much better homemade. I said, how do you know this? Do you make lavash? She said, no, I don't. But my two sisters made it going back 35, 40 years ago.
Wow. It's a delicious bread, and it's simple. I mean, it's something that you can kind of be flexible about. It's if you want to leave the dough in the fridge for a day and then use it the next day, it's you can do that, and that's a nice thing. You can kind of fit it into your schedule.
Well, we'll talk about some of these recipes, but it's fascinating how you've taken it, or they've taken it, and wrapped it around things and baked them around vegetables and around meats and all of that stuff. So it has a lot of versatility, too, at the same time. So one of the things, talking about recipes, Tonir Hatz, mm-hmm. is that how you say it? Hatz?
Hatz basically is bread.
Bread, in okay. Yeah. And in the book, you sort of say, well, this is maybe even more popular than lavash. And how does it differ?
Tonir Hatz is from a part of the world, it's not quite Armenia, but it's the Republic of Artsakh. And we were there and we visited, and Google Maps told us that we were in Azerbaijan. But it's they're part of a frozen conflict that goes back years.
To the 90s.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And but they don't actually make, even though ethnically they are Armenian, they make tonir hatz. And what hatz means bread in Armenian, and tonir is the oven. Mm-hmm. So this is a really simple flatbread that they use more often than they use lavash. And it's something that they make to be on every table, just like lavash, and it's almost more like a focaccia. It's a little bit fluffier, but it's they use the tonir still to make it.
The other thing that I found interesting was the use of this dough to make noodles, mm-hmm. There are two or three different things. There's this beautiful photograph in here. Talk about that a little bit. About those noodles.
And these noodles are strung over clothesline, is that right? Is that a photo you took, John?
Yes, it is.
Is that in Armenia?
That was in the village of Argel, which actually is the village where we took the recipe for lavash. But that village also, they make this arishta noodle, essentially.
Dried flour noodles.
Yeah. Right. And what's interesting is that the dough is almost the same, but they use a lot of salt in the dough. And the thing is, instead of, you know, when you're used to cooking Italian pasta, you're always told, make that water really salty, right? Boil the noodles in salty water. Here, you actually don't add salt to the water. You add salt to the dough. The dough is salty. They make the dough, and then in the fall, particularly when it's dry, the climate is kind of like California that way. It rains when it rains, and then when it stops, it's dry for many, many months. Mm-hmm. And so when they dry the noodles, they string it over clothesline. So you drive into this town, and it's a village, really. It's not even a town. Mm-hmm. And you see these beautiful lines, these clotheslines of noodles drying. And when it's time to actually sell the noodles, they toast it. They toast the noodles, and then it's ready to go. And sometimes the noodles break up, and they're a little smaller than the strands that you see drying. But then they can use it more like a pilaf, almost like you would a rice pilaf, but it's actually made with
rice
noodles.
Rice-a-roni. There you go.
You know what? And rice. Speaking of Armenians, it was an Armenian family that created that. So.
And it was unheard of to take and toast pasta, and they combined it with rice. But is that how it's traditionally done there, too, with rice or not?
Not with rice. Arishta in Armenia, usually they use it just as it is. And the most traditional way, I asked the woman who makes the arishta, and she said, you use butter. You put butter on him. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else? Oh, you serve it with pickles on the side. Okay. And she loves the taste of the simplicity of the toasted noodles that are just boiled in water with butter on top. For her, that's fine. For for Yerevan restaurants, they like to do a little bit more. They like to get a little fancier. They'll use mushrooms, maybe a little bit of dill. And put like a garlic yogurt sauce.
That egg noodles with yogurt recipe.
Yeah, yeah, this is a great picture.
I think you just came up with something that, a rishtaroni.
A rishtaroni, I like it.
Let's
copyright it.
Trademark
it before you could go. Also, there's wonderful memories of growing up in an Egyptian-Armenian household that Ara shares in the book. He has a beautiful story about his great-great-grandfather escaping from Syria and Jordan and the repression he faced and fleeing certain death with he and his family and ending up in Egypt and being able, because he luckily could speak fluent Arabic, he was able to mainstream into the population. And these type of stories are sprinkled through the book also.
I have a cook's question for you. So one of the things I was really intrigued with, another recipe, was the yogurt soup. And the yogurt soup has yogurt and eggs in it. And you heat it up, you cook it. How come it doesn't curdle?
Well, you know, you have to use the one special wooden spoon from Ara's, you know, family friends. Yeah. But it the real thing is, the name of the soup is it's spas, and I think it's kind of fun to have a healthful soup called spas. I think it makes sense for Americans' minds, but there it really is a very simple soup, and the way you keep the eggs and yogurt from curdling is you sort of temper the eggs, so you add them gradually to the warm base of the soup and stir it or whisk it, whatever you prefer, to make sure it all kind of the eggs get gently heated throughout the process.
Got it. Yeah. So it's kind of like Greek lemon rice soup. Same sort of idea.
Yeah. What is it? Avogal lemon?
Look at you.
I know.
You speak so many languages.
Thank you. The next chapter is Sides and Creating Abundance. What a beautiful title. Creating Abundance. Summer salads and salat vinaigrette. Is that the Soviet era salad? And I put a big star by this because it sounded so unique. The avaluk salad, dried sour herb mixed with walnuts and pomegranates. Who came up with that one?
So I have to come clean that the salad actually doesn't have avaluk in it, the one we made, but we really wanted to touch on what avaluk is. So avaluk is a really important herb in Armenia. Armenia and I think Georgia probably have some of the most biodiversity when it comes to herbs in the world. And avaluk is one of those herbs that you really don't see in other parts of the world. It's almost like, think of sorrel, if the sorrel leaf grew really long, so long you could braid it. You braid it into a wreath and then you let it dry in the sun.
But it has that kind of lemony, sour.
Yes, it does.
Flavor.
And so you rehydrate it and then you make either a soup or a salad with it. And we wanted to kind of capture and celebrate that idea of avaluk without making people have to fly to Armenia and smuggle out these avaluk wreaths. So the idea is to have like these greens that you cook lightly and then you make bright with a little bit of acidity and you serve it with walnuts and pomegranates, which are iconic ingredients in all of Armenian cooking.
You mentioned that you even see images of pomegranates carved into doors in Armenia.
Right. John has a beautiful picture of Tatev Monastery, and in that picture, but in that place, if you're paying attention to the details of the wood carvings, you'll see pomegranates and grapes carved into monastery doors.
So, I think you brought some of this. The beef tartare, the cured meat. Is that
That's the bastirma.
Okay, yeah. That's great. But the beef tartare, it sounds a little scary to make, but probably not because they've been doing it for a long time.
I mean, I think the idea of raw beef in general. But unless you are a tartare fan, and then even the idea of raw eggs, right, when you mix it in.
Yeah.
So.
Well, our chef Arazada, who co-wrote the book with you, said it was his favorite dish.
Oh, he loves this dish.
Yeah. But it's different than beef tartare as the French do it. Can you describe it a little?
Sure. It's what you do is one thing you have to do is if you live near an Armenian butcher shop, you get this beef that's been prepared specifically for the dish. And if you don't, it's better for you to buy fresh meat that you know is really good quality, and then mince it yourself. Mm. But you wouldn't necessarily want to buy ground beef and make this preparation. Mm. That's the trickiest thing. It's not hard to make, but the hardest thing is to find the right beef to make. And then you mix in bulgur. and some seasonings. And what that does is it kind of absorbs and it becomes this becomes finger food, really. And you can just take it and eat it.
So that is it similar to kofta?
Yes, it is.
Is it same?
It's your kofta, right. Yep. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
So we should take a break because we want to taste some of the pastorma during the break. Ah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And what else did you bring? Cilantro and is it cucumbers?
Right.
And
so
lavash?
What we have is sort of like a spread of what you'd see at every Armenian table, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm. You would have a spread that would have a stack of lavash and then fresh herbs. And then probably some cucumbers. We brought in some feta cheese. There it would be Lori cheese, probably, which is a cheese, a cow's milk cheese, salty cow's milk cheese from the Lori region in northern Armenia. And we brought in some pastırma because whether you're in Armenia or you live, you're the part of the Armenian diaspora, you know pastırma as that special cured meat with the spices.
Thank you for correcting. It's bastumer, not bastorma.
Oh, well.
No, you're probably right. I leave it to you. So while we take a break, we're starting the next chapter, feasting, kash, koravets, and heartier dishes. So we'll feast during this break and be back. Steve Garner and Chef John Ash joining Kate Leahy and John Lee, co-authors of the new book, Lavash, the bread that launched 1,000 meals. This is KSRO. In the KSRO kitchen, we didn't really feast during that break. I have to be...
Yeah, well...
You have to come clean.
Yeah.
The new book is called Lavash, written by Kate Leahy and John Lee. They're joining us today in the kitchen. They brought a lovely spread of some of the dishes that illustrate some of the recipes from Lavash. And we're in the feasting section. And this is
which is a lot of
big
drinking.
Isn't
it? There's a lot of toast.
I learned to love vodka during that.
Is that the spirit of choice?
Yes.
Do they distill vodka in Armenia?
I would, in the early mornings, we go to a bazaar and some kind of, an old Armenian man would give me essentially a little plastic capful of the homemade moonshine, whatever it was, made from mulberries or whatever. It would knock me off my feet. I mean, the first thing
so
in the morning.
So that explains the grainy photography.
Yeah, right. Everything has a slight blur to it. It's artistic.
A little out of focus.
Yeah. But that's you were referring to the toasting rituals, John, in this book.
It was, and you have a great picture in there of this whole, it's fantastic, of this whole family. Some are dancing, some are drinking.
Yeah, that was at this restaurant called Gayanemat, which unfortunately now is not there. But that was in the capital of Yerevan. And we, Kate and I, were brought in there by this just to pop in to take a look at it, And we kind of happened into this family who was celebrating a birthday. And in classic Armenian kind of hospitality form, they see us, and next they bring us in. Chairs are brought in, more plates, and next thing food is brought out, and then the toasts start happening, and you're there for hours. So it's magical.
And do you get pretty wasted?
I get wasted. I definitely, many, many times.
And John, this is where the gapama makes an appearance, the rice-filled pumpkin dish that you spoke of earlier. So it's just one. And that's spelled Gapama for those that would like to look that up.
And the song that goes along with it is Hey John Gapama. And it's J-A-N. Hey J-A-N.
Deer. J-N is deer.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Hey Deer Gapama. And the song really all it is about is like, hey, check out this amazing pumpkin. It smells delicious. Check it out. Like, it's a song about how delicious this pumpkin is. That's it.
So this was an example, which I found really interesting, taking the lavash and grilling trout with it.
It was really like a kind of cooking, like a en papillote style, where you're, instead of using a parchment paper parcel, you're using lavash to do it. And I think what happens is because the bread is so thin, you can use it as a cooking vessel as well as an eating vessel, really. It's incredibly... easy to use. I mean, I couldn't, that trout recipe is one of my favorites because it couldn't be any simpler. You have a nice trout, you wrap it in the bread, you put some herbs and a little bit of butter, and you take it out, and it's crispy, the butter has melted into the trout is nice and flaky, and it's beautiful.
You also have that braised trout recipe that you visit a restaurant that also doubles as a fish hatchery?
Yes, only in Armenia, right?
Would watch them go to the pond that they had, and they would take the sturgeon out, and they would beat it with the stick, and next thing you know, it was on the grill.
Yeah.
That's fresh fish.
It was very fresh.
That's restaurant Cherkezi Dzor, Dzor?
Right, in the outside of, or in the outskirts of the city of Gyumri in the north.
Is there a travel guide to Armenia? If someone could find, I'm going to go visit that restaurant. How do you find these restaurants? I mean, buy the book.
You know what? You buy the book and you can always reach out to us. Our website has, you can just contact us through our website and we'll help you out, because we do feel it's a country that when you're there, it's incredibly easy to find your way around by asking people for help. But getting people there is the tricky part, because if you don't know your way around, it's a little bit, well, how am I going to find this place? Mm. We'll help you out.
Do enough people have a smidgen of English?
I think there's enough. So what's happened is you have a lot of Armenian Americans, you know, who grew up in America, who take pride in wanting to prop up the country. You know, the idea of rebuilding this country that, you know. So it's like this kind of repatriation, Repat Armenia, actually, is an actual kind of organization.
There's a dish in here that you describe as, this is one of the most deceptively understated dishes in Armenia, and one of the oldest. And it's this thing called, which I'd never heard, I've heard of it in its other use, harissa, which is actually an herb of chili paste that we find in.
And this is not that.
This isn't that.
Not that
what
at
is
all.
It?
Well, what it is it's cooking meat, a very little amount of meat, in a lot of wheat berries. And the wheat berries, where Armenia is in the world and the history of Armenia in that part of the world, this is really where grains, where grain farming really began. So the importance of the wheat berry can't be understated. It's not only used for breads, but it's used as for porridges. And harissa is really a porridge made with wheat berries with a little bit of protein. And the idea is you can take a small amount, whether it's chicken or maybe duck or pork. Historically, in the part of Armenia that was destroyed with the genocide, that would be lamb. But in Armenia and the borders, that's really oftentimes chicken. And you braise it, you cook it, and you stir it so it's creamy. So you have these creamy kernels of wheat berries, seasoned with a little bit of chicken, and just salt and maybe some salted butter. It sounds really like, well, how can you get flavor out of this? But it's surprising how comforting, almost thinking maybe like a rice chicken.
Is it like juk?
I guess it would be like kanji, right, exactly, right, yeah, juk, right. Yeah.
So wheat, and you talk about this in the book, that a lot of heirloom wheat varieties still exist there. And you didn't address it in the book, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but what about, you know, all of this concern these days in this country about gluten allergies and things like that. Is that an issue there? Because they eat so much wheat.
You know, that was a really good, that was something that I was curious about because we had this amazing translator who, after she hung out with us in our crazy food adventures, she then was going to be leading around a group from England that were vegan and also gluten intolerant. And in Armenia, just to be completely honest, that is hard because I don't think people understand what being gluten-free is. I didn't come across anybody who even spoke of a gluten allergy. They would think, oh, you eat too much bread, just eat lavash because it's skinnier. You know, it's thinner, it's not as much. So I think maybe because when you're eating these historic grains that have always been farmed organically because they couldn't afford not to, they couldn't afford pesticides, they weren't maybe exposed genetically to the things that our country is facing.
So one other thing we need to touch on, if we can, there are probably a couple more things we need to touch on, but is wine. It's the kind of birthplace of wine in many ways. I mean, I know there's some dispute among various ethnic groups about where wine really started, but this certainly was one of them.
Well, there's a cave about 2.5 hours drive south of Yerevan. There's the RNE-1 cave complex. Is that correct, Kate?
Right.
It's disputed between Georgia and Armenia as to who has the older, who is the birthplace of
Did you
wine.
Drink wine when you were there?
Lots. There was no shortage of beverages.
Okay. Well, between the vodka, it's amazing you got the photography done.
It just makes it better.
The final chapter is A Summer Thorn is a Winter's Sweet, Fruit Preserves and Baked Treats.
And I'll just, one quick thing before, just about the titles of our chapters. We were inspired by the Smithsonian that did the Folklife Festival last year. They invited basically a lot of villagers from Armenia to recreate folklore traditions on the Mall of D.C. And these were some of the themes that they had. So we were inspired and we asked our friends at the Smithsonian, hey, can we borrow your idea for these beautiful chapter for our chapter openers?
They're very poetic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for crediting where credit was due. So do you want to give us some highlights of that chapter? There's some fruit leathers in there, and there's some wild coffee cake with walnuts. And
it with all of the baking that they do, there, it isn't baking as we think about in the West. It's much simpler, and the sweets are simpler. They're based upon the use of fruits and a bit of sugar or honey or something like that. And so they weren't complicated.
No, they weren't complicated. And actually, that's one of the things I love about the sweets in this chapter. They're not going to be too sweet, but they're also really satisfying to make. You can make them. You can really get your hands in them, but you don't need a lot of special equipment. And one of the things that I think a recipe I'm really proud of is our baklava recipe. A lot of Armenians in California call baklava paklava. And they make it's a language difference between the Armenians in Armenia and the Armenians in
Eastern
diaspora,
Armenia,
how
Western
they do
Armenian,
the B
right.
and the P. But they say baklava in Armenia. And the baklava we had was from a southern Armenian city of Goris. And in Goris, they make baklava not with phyllo, but with a short crust pastry that you make three layers. And in between those layers is like a egg white meringue with walnuts. And it's really delicious. We actually had it, and we said, this is so good, we need to find a woman who can help us figure out how to make it. And sure enough.
It sounds spectacular. Clarified butter, it's sugar, and there's an egg, there's a meringue on it also.
It's actually, we don't even use clarified butter in it.
Oh,
we
don't
use butter as like a, almost like more of a shortbread crust, or short crust, and the egg whites are whipped with sugar and then folded with walnuts, and those are the layers.
You agree about your favorite number between 1 and 12?
I mean, 3 is the magic number.
What do you think?
7.
So that, well, if you add those together, it's 10. Can we go with 10?
Sure.
Caller number 10 at 636. I'm the great peacemaker.
Yeah, yes.
Caller number 10 at 636-1350 will win this autographed copy of the new book, Lavash, The Bread That Launched a Thousand Meals. What a delicious cover, that beautiful browned crisp lavash.
You know, I told you that there's one picture in there that, I mean, all the pictures are really beautiful, but this amazing woman, she's got the bread out on the floor or on something, on a towel or...
plastic.
But she's bent from the waist straight down. Her back is straight. Her legs are straight.
It's the idea of a lifetime of doing one thing over and over again. And she has this kind of like this yoga pose almost where she's just bent over. I mean, this strong, acute angle as she's just kind of managing this dough, you know? And she has these kind of funny little socks that says love on it, you know? It's really kind of this, it's cute. It's quirky.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful story to end on.
Great.
Thank you both, Kate, for coming today from San Francisco and from flying in from Singapore, John. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
The book again, Lavash.
Thank you.
The Bread That Launched a Thousand Meals. Chef John Ash, we'll see you next week in the KSRO Kitchen.
You will.
I'm Steve Garner. This is KSRO.